But still I have these questions.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be together. And I hope you feel that, like, hey, you know, this is a safe place. Because it's a little crazy out there. You never know. Like, we live in the sarcasm capital of the world, which is a lot of fun, but you also have to watch your back. I love this this little video here. Check this out. Hey, Bob. It's like, how you doing, Bob? Good to see you. Yeah, you too. Like, that's how, you know, that's how we feel sometimes. Like, do you ever feel beat down? I mean, my father and I, every time we see each other, you know, we do the, hey, Dad, you got something on your shirt. And he won't look down. I mean, a small child could vomit on his chest, but he won't look down because he knows as soon as he does, I'm gone, you know. And he does it to me. It's just like the thing since I've grown up. He's 71, I'm 51. We'll just be doing it like the rest of our lives. But in time, just our culture, it can beat us down. It can wear us out to the point where sometimes we can feel like damaged goods. Like, you know what? Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm not fast enough. Maybe I'm not smart enough. Maybe I'm not wealthy enough. Maybe I'm not good looking enough. Maybe not my family's not perfect enough. You know, you ever feel like you're not fill in the blank enough? It's common. But what happens to us when we start owning that? That's a dangerous place, because when we do, we start to doubt ourselves and we can diminish the power of God in us. Because God could be nudging us, God could be prompting us to stand up, to say something, to lead the charge, lead the pack, but we're like, I don't know if I'm good enough. You know, maybe he could do it better. Maybe she could do it better. I'll just sit back. We miss out. Let's not do that. I want to tell you about some people who were told they weren't good enough. 1789, William Wilberforce, he stood before the British Parliament and he eloquently cried out for the day that men, women, and children would no longer be bought and sold like farm animals. Deaf ears. They ignored him. He fought for this year after year after year till finally he was able to present a bill before Parliament. And it was not passed. In fact, he presented that same bill for 18 years and was defeated every year until finally, 4 days before he died, the bill was passed and slavery was abolished in England. It took 44 years. Closer to home, early 20th century, this young, dynamic industrialist named Henry Ford stood before a group of people and he said, a day is coming. We will provide affordable transportation for everyone. And people laughed out loud. It was the first LOL right there at that meeting. And 15 years later, the Henry Ford Company was producing millions of Model Ts that were available at an affordable price for that day. And then in 1963, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King stood on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., and he painted this picture of what life could be like. He said, I have a dream that my four children will grow up in a nation where they will not be identified by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Then you can even just take it a little personally. My story of starting at church. I grew up in New York and Connecticut, then I went out west for college. And when I was at West, I just had this real sense that God was saying, I want you to go back home and start a church. And I thought, that is funny. There's no way I can do that. And part of it because I didn't think I was enough. Good enough, smart enough, whatever, enough. And partly because these two pastors that I had worked for as a youth pastor were just phenomenal. One guy is named Ken Hutcherson, and he was just a presence. Before being a pastor, he was the middle linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys, and then later the Seattle Seahawks, and that's how he lived life. just went after it. And he was fun and upbeat. Then the next pastor I worked for was named Rick Warren, who only wrote the world's number one best-selling nonfiction book of all time, Purpose-Driven Life. Both of these men, huge personalities, full of life, full of love. They walk into a room, everybody knew, and they were just, you know, working the room, and everybody wanted to be by them. I walk into a room. Yeah, thanks. That's exactly what happens, if people even notice. But that's okay. It's like, that's more my personality. And so I just said, no. And then it got to a point where Janine and I realized this is just an issue of obedience. And so we took our, at that time, 5, 3, and 1-year-old daughter and moved at that point from Southern California into Lower Manhattan and started a church. And today, right now, there's services going on at Lower Manhattan Community Church. And what's cool is the pastor was in the youth group that I led in California. So that's very cool, just kind of a passing of the baton. But I say all that because for a long time, I wasn't enough. And the reality was, I wasn't like those guys at all. But God said, I can use you. And God has two messages. Jesus wants us to hear two things today, two messages. The first one is, I'm not done with you. I'm not done with you, regardless of your past. And it's important to be reminded of that because I think many of us were tempted to live what I'll call like less than lives because we feel like we're not enough. And that's a shame because I think deep down, we want to grow in our faith. We want to connect with God in a way that transforms those around us. We want to follow him in a faith-filled life of adventure. I think we really want that, but we resist because we feel like we're not enough. But Jesus is saying, I'm not done with you. And the second message he has for us today is that I want all of you. I don't want you just for an hour on Sunday or even 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. I want all of you. I want your complete obedience, your complete attention. I want you to focus on me. Ignore what you're hearing around you. Focus on me. Don't worry about what others are doing that's right or even what's wrong. Focus on me. In other words, don't live the comparison game. You know, we compare what we know about ourselves with what we don't know about other people. And that's dangerous. And we compare our life to Facebook lives, right? You ever go on Facebook and you think, oh, look how like beautiful she is. Oh, look at this promotion she got. Oh, look at this family. They're like perfect. Oh, look at this, you know, car. But the reality is all of those pictures, none of them are just random snapshots. Those are posed photos that have been edited, cropped, you know, filtered. Like, it's like the best of the best. And they don't show the photos of like, oh, look how they travel the world. It's so cool. They don't show the photos when they're just exhausted from like the time change or taking an overnight flight. And they're just, you know, they didn't wake up and like, this is what I look like today, you know, snap. The people with the perfect family, they don't show you the photo right before the kids were fighting. And then right after the photo, you know, the little kid picked up gum off the sidewalk and started chewing it. They don't take those pictures and post them. Hey, my encouragement to you is just take some random photos of what your life is really like. It's okay. Let's be real. But Jesus is saying to us today, I'm not done with you, right? Don't worry. Forget about your past. I'm not done with you, and I want all of you. Wouldn't it be great to have a conversation with Jesus where he could evaluate our lives and then give us immediate feedback so we knew where we stood in the situation? That'd be pretty cool. Well, we actually have a conversation like that recorded by a guy named John. John was one of Jesus' disciples, followers, one of the 12. And he actually wrote a book. It's a biography on Jesus' life, the Gospel of John. There's four of them, Gospel of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And John wrote this, and we're going to focus on a section in chapter 21, verses 15 to 22, where we get this immediate feedback with one of the characters. But I want to start with verse 1 just so we have some context, all right? So here's John chapter 21, verse 1. It says this. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. All right, pretty inauspicious start. After what? Well, only the biggest events in the history of the world. All right, this is chapter 21. Chapter 19, Jesus is crucified and buried. Chapter 20, Jesus is resurrected from the dead, appears to his disciples, and then to hundreds of others. So, afterward, after these incredible things happened, okay? That's the context. So, after all of this, let me just summarize verses 2 to 14. Seven of the disciples, John's writing, seven of the disciples were together this one particular day. I don't know the conversation, but one of them, I'm going to guess it was Peter, said, I'm going fishing. Anybody want to go fishing? And the guy's like, yeah, I'll go. Okay. So they went fishing. They go fishing. And the Bible tells us, or John writes, that they fish all day, all night, and they catch nothing. Zilch, nada, squat, nothing. So they're going in, and they were okay because they saw a little bumper sticker on another boat, you know, like a bad day of fishing is better than a good day at work. You know? But as they're coming in the shore, there's a guy on the beach, a little fire. They could smell like fish is cooking. And the guy yells out, hey, did you catch any fish? This is exactly what a group of professional fishermen want to hear when they've caught nothing, right? So they're like, no. Yeah, who is this guy, right? Well, the guy shoots back. Throw your net off the right side of the boat and you'll find some. Also exactly what a group of professional fishermen do not want to hear. Who's this guy? And I'm sure that's what they said. I'm not doing that. And everybody's like, yeah, who's this guy? I don't know this guy. I'm not doing that. But somebody in the boat must have said, guys, who cares? We got nothing in the net now. It doesn't matter if we have nothing again. So they throw the net in the water. Look at verse 6. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Okay, that's when I think John, who's writing, says to Peter, it's the Lord. It's the Lord. The next sound you hear is this big splash. Or this. I actually had, there was another button. The next sound they hear is, there it is. Although, excellent choice. Can we go back to that? No, exactly, keep going. They heard splash because Peter jumped into the water. He jumped into the water and he's heading to the beach towards Jesus. And so the boat's coming back. Jesus is already cooking some fish when they get there, and he says, "Hey, bring some more of your fish over." So that's what's happening. And just a little tease. This is a tease. Jesus is not only cooking them breakfast, but it's over a fire of burning coals. Ooh, where is he going to go with that? I'm coming back to that one. All right, let's look at what verse 15 says. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? All right, there's a lot going on here in this verse. Because several days earlier, all right, let me Tarantino it and go back. Several days earlier, Jesus was preparing his disciples for his upcoming death, burial, resurrection. And he told them, he said, guys, where I'm going, you can't follow me. And Peter, one of his followers, was just adamant. You know, he just banged his fist on the table, I'm imagining, and he said, I will follow you always, Jesus, even to the point of death. Now, I don't see Jesus as a giggler, but in that moment, I can kind of sense him like just like trying to fight back some laughter because he knew what was coming. And what he did say is, really, Peter? Because actually, before this night ends, you're going to deny me Three times. And that's exactly what happened. And now that he is standing before Jesus, jumps out of the boat, runs up on the beach, standing before Jesus, I can only imagine that memory from just a few days prior is probably just burning on his heart. And there's just this feeling of shame, feeling of regret. But you know what I love? I love that John jumped in the water and went towards Jesus. Because if the text said he jumped in the water and he went away from Jesus, that would really make sense. Logical, like, oh no. There he is. I did just what he said. I can't be seen with him. I can't be seen. So let me ask you, when you sin, do you run towards Jesus or do you run away from him? The reality is Jesus is the only one that can really provide the healing and the hope that we have. Do you run towards Jesus like Peter did or away? Put another way, are you like, you know, this dog, shame, regret, or like this dog, like just super happy, I'm so glad, you know, I'm glad you're home. How do you respond when you sin? You're just full of shame, you hide from Jesus, or you can't wait to be in his arms? Well, what else is happening in this verse? Let's go back to it. Interesting, verse 15, Jesus calls Simon Peter, Simon, son of John. Do you know why? Because that's his name. He is Simon, the son of John. But what's significant about that is in the beginning of this story, chapter 1, when Jesus actually meets Simon, son of John, he changes his name, which is pretty gutsy. I'd be like, this is Reggie. Hey, you're Reggie, right? Nah, I'm going to call you Alfred. Justine, right? No, Barbara. I mean, like, what's he doing? He's changing his name. But what he's doing is he's casting vision on the life of Peter. He is blessing him because Peter, translated, means rock. He's like, yeah, you're Simon, son of John, but you're going to be Simon Peter, the rock. But Jesus doesn't call him by his nickname here. He doesn't call him Peter, but he calls him by his old name, Simon, son of John. See, Peter had so intensely denied Jesus that they kind of had to reestablish the boundaries of their friendship. Okay, let's start again. Simon, son of John. And see, Peter's this passionate man. And throughout what we would call the New Testament, the letters, the stories of the life of Jesus and the church, we discover that Peter was willing to take risks. He was ready to defend those he loved, but not always. And at this point in John's gospel, we discover that underneath Peter's passion and bravado was really just a weak man. That's a lot like us, right? A lot of times we'll put on the big front, kind of strut, when really in our minds we're like, oh man, I'm so scared. Or we have to like give an answer in a classroom or a boardroom or in our home. You know, we'll speak confidently and loudly and fast, and maybe they won't know. I don't know what I'm talking about, right? We kind of put on this act, or maybe I'm the only one. So if I start speaking loudly around you and fast, I don't know what I'm talking about. But I wonder if in that moment, days before, before Peter said, Jesus, I will follow you always, even to the point of death, what would have happened if he said, Jesus, I love you. My heart is, I want to follow you always. But I got to be honest, I don't know what this looks like. I'm a little intimidated. I'm a little scared. Would you help me? I don't know if that would have changed things, but it will change things for us, I can promise you right now, if we're honest. All right. When they finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my lambs. Wow. Feed my lambs. There had to be this moment of great satisfaction for Peter on hearing Jesus again giving him responsibility. commissioning him to ministry. And I can imagine this long like exhale of relief. Like, I'm back. I'm back. Jesus is trusting me again. Right? Time must have stood still. I can only imagine. Right? Peter's greatest nightmare now is over. Jesus was giving him again meaning in his life. But that moment didn't last long. Verse 16. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Wait, what? Right? Peter's like, what? What's going on? I already answered this question. I mean, even if the disciples distracted him while I was answering, he heard me. He is God, after all. We've discovered that. Anyone who predicts his own death and then walks out of his own grave knows what's going on in the world. Why, you know, what's going on here? And so he answered again, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. Okay, Peter's thinking that was weird. But I'm glad that's over with. And then, verse 17, the third time, he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? All right, now even John, who's writing down this story, understands the awkwardness of this moment. And so he writes, Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Feed my sheep, Jesus said. So let's go around that fire. Let's go around that. And I want you to see it. I want you to hear it. Can you even smell it? You ever like be around a fire for even just a little while, and you go inside, take your coat off. Next day, you go to get your coat, and you're like, wow, it really smells like smoke. Like, it just goes right to it. You ever, like, sing songs around a fire? You ever just hang out telling stories? Marshmallows, right? It creates memories. It creates these moments. And what Jesus is doing around this fire, he's cooking the guy's fish. Around this fire, he's having this conversation. And what Jesus is doing is beautiful. And it's full of grace. An author, Tom Constable, says, Jesus probably intended that Peter's threefold profession of love would correspond to, and in a sense, counteract his threefold denial. He denied the Lord around a fire in the presence of many witnesses. And now Jesus just gave him an opportunity to profess his faith around an open fire in the presence of many witnesses. Tom Constable writes, Jesus, the great physician, was healing Peter's wounds. It's an awesome picture. Just interesting fun fact, the phrase in the Bible for open coal of fire, it's only used two times in all of the New Testament. The first time, describing Peter's denial, the second time right here. What are the campfire moments? I don't mean literal fire, but what are the moments in your life when you think, oh man, if I could only go back and change things, I would, or I can't believe I did that, and maybe there's shame connected to that. But Jesus is inviting you back to that moment and saying, I've forgiven you. Stop listening to what others are saying or how they're pointing at you. I've forgiven you. Will you love me? Will you follow me? Two messages Jesus has for us. The first is, I'm not done with you, regardless of your past. I'm not done. But he had more for Peter that morning, and he has more for us. Look at verse 18. Very truly, I tell you, this is Jesus talking to Peter. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. What? Huh? And John sensed that we would be wondering that same thing. And so he writes, verse 19, Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. The phrase, stretch out your hands, it was a euphemistic reference to crucifixion in the Roman world. And so when he's saying your arms would be stretched out, he knew exactly what he was saying, because they would stretch out arms and then fasten the arms to the post, and then they would walk together to the place of crucifixion and continue the process from there. So Peter's hearing all this. Hey, the good news, I've called you to feed my sheep. Bad news is, you're going to die. We don't know the timing on all this, but this is what's going to happen. What's Peter doing? What's he thinking? Well, verse 20, Peter turned, and he saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. And a little parenthetical note, this was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and said, Lord, who's going to betray you? So it's John. It's John himself. So Peter turned, saw John. When Peter saw him, he asked, well, Lord, what about him? What about him? Classic Peter. Right? Peter just gets reestablished as a leader in front of his peers, and he's concerned someone else might get off a little easier. God, you know, I'm going to be crucified. Well, what about him? What's going to happen to him? Yeah, it's reasonable to be concerned about hearing the news that you're going to die through crucifixion, but he wants to make sure he's not the only one going down. You ever look at another person and you think, man, they've got it made. That's not fair. You know, why do they get to do this? What's the deal? And what Jesus was saying is, don't worry about anyone else, Peter. You follow me. Period. Verse 22. Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. And like Peter, you and I will be tempted at one time or another to compare our lives to someone else and say, you know, poor me, right? I'm being crucified. Well, you know, this person or that group, they're just cruising through life. Like, why me? And you know what? It's because we don't understand what battles that person or the group of people is presently experiencing. Right? We compare what we know about ourselves to what we don't know about others. We don't know what's going on in their lives, what fight they're fighting, or that we'll be facing in the future. Two messages. Jesus wants us to know, I'm not done with you, and I want all of you. I want you to focus on me. Right? Stop your head from being on a swivel. You're going back and forth, comparing yourself, and just focus on me. Listen for me. Look to me. Follow me. Block out the noise. Put the blinders on. Learn to hear my voice. Paul, the Apostle Paul, he writes that there's no temptation that comes to any of us, unique to us. We experience temptation that's common to all people. So every person goes through equal difficulty. It'll look different, it'll have different timing and different contexts, etc. But everyone is experiencing it. We just don't see it. But I tell you, when we get to heaven, not one of us will say, man, you really had it out for me. You picked on me. What's the deal with that? No. When we get to heaven, according to Revelation chapter 16, verse 7, we are going to fall before the throne and say, Lord, you are fair, you are equitable in everything that you did. I'm not worthy, but I worship you. So the next time you're tempted to have a personal pity party, remember that Jesus doesn't have to explain. He's simply saying, follow me. Follow me. Follow me. Follow me. Follow me. Jesus helped Peter grasp that his most valuable life lesson was that he had to learn humility before he could practice leadership. Peter needed to confront, realistically, his shortcomings before he could guide the flock, before he could feed the sheep, before he could lead them. Right? This strong, powerful person had to be broken down before he could deal with compassion towards others. Love this quote. Henry Nouwen says, "The long, painful history of the church is the history of people ever and again tempted to choose power over love, control over the cross, being a leader over being led." So what happened? Here we have this conversation around the open campfire. Let's go back to that campfire. Here he is. What happened? What did Peter do? Well, in the book of Acts, a history book in the New Testament, written by Luke, Dr. Luke, chapter 2 in Acts says, "Peter stood up with the 11, raised his voice, addressed the crowd, 'Fellow Jews and all of you who live in Jerusalem, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say.'" And then the rest of the chapter, he goes on to share the gospel. He goes on to share the good news that Jesus died for them, offers forgiveness. And the text tells us that 3,000 came to faith that day and were baptized. Next chapter, chapter 3, a lame man approaches Peter begging for money. Peter says, "Silver or gold, I do not have. But what I do have, I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, walk." And this lame man got up and walked away. Miracles were happening from this man. Next chapter, they called them in again and commanded them, Peter and John, not to speak or teach at all in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John replied, "Which is right in God's eyes, to listen to you or to him? You be the judges. As for us, we cannot help speaking about what we have seen and heard." This proud manhood and broken down, recommissioned around the campfire, was now boldly living for Jesus. Folks, two messages that God has for you. I'm not done with you. Regardless of your past, I'm not done. And I want all of you. I'm going to let this fire go. All right, let's warm up by the fire. And I want to just give you about 60 seconds of reflection. And I want you to think, Is there something that I have not let go of? Is there like a sin that just keeps haunting me? Confess it and it's done with. If it keeps haunting you, that's not from God. That's from the enemy. And you just say, "I'm choosing to believe, Jesus, that I am forgiven." So is there something that you need to confess? Or is there something, is there an act of obedience you need to respond to? He wants all of us. Has God been nudging you, prompting you to say something, do something, but you've been resisting? Let's just take 60 seconds and reflect. Heavenly Father, thank you that you offer forgiveness. And God, there may be folks in here who have never really offered their lives to you. Folks, if this is you, if you've heard that Jesus forgives you and you believed it in your head but never really embraced it in your heart, just pray a prayer like this. Jesus, here I am. Thank you for offering forgiveness. I now get it and I want it. I invite you to lead my life. I surrender to you. And maybe there's some folks in here, maybe we've been believers for a while, but there's slices of our life pie that we hold on to. Jesus wants it all. So maybe you're praying a prayer like this. Jesus, you know what I'm holding on to, and my fists are clenched because I'm holding on as tightly as I can, but I'm opening up my hands and I'm saying, "It's yours. It's yours. I'm coming clean. When you nudge me forward, I'm going. I'm following you." I pray these things in Jesus' name.